The latest memo from the Bureau of Prisons in Washington baffled the warden. Who in hell's name up there had nothing better to do than to stare at a map of the federal prisons and decide which one to meddle with that day? He had a brother making $150,000 selling used cars, and there he was making half that much running a prison and reading idiotic memos from pencil pushers making $100,000 and not doing a productive damn thing. He was so sick of it. Re: Attorney Visitation, Trumbull Federal Prison. Disregard prior order. Said order restricting attorney visitation to Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays from 3 to 6 p.m. Attorneys are now permitted to visit 7 days a week from 9 to 7 p.m. Takes a dead lawyer to get rules changed, he mumbled to himself. Chapter 35. Deep in a basement garage, they rolled Teddy Maynard into his van and locked the doors. York and DeVille sat with him. A driver and a bodyguard handled the van, which had a television, a stereo, and a small bar with bottled water and sodas, all of which were ignored by Teddy. He was subdued and dreading the next hour. He was tired. Tired of his work, tired of the fight. Tired of forcing himself through another day, then another. Fight it 6 more months, he kept telling himself. Then give it up and let someone else worry about saving the world. He'd go quietly to his small farm in West Virginia where he'd sit by the pond, watch the leaves fall into the water, and wait for the end. He was so tired of the pain. There was a black car in front of them and a gray one behind, and the little convoy made its way around the Beltway, then east across the Roosevelt Bridge, and onto Constitution Avenue. Teddy was silent, so therefore York and DeVille were too. They knew how much he loathed what he was about to do. He talked to the president once a week, usually on Wednesday morning, always by phone if Teddy had his way. They last saw each other 9 months earlier when Teddy was in the hospital, and the president needed to be briefed. The favors usually fell to an equal level, but Teddy hated to be on the same footing with any president. He'd get the favor he wanted, but it was the asking that humiliated him. In 30 years, he'd survived 6 presidents, and his secret weapon had been the favors. Gather the intelligence, hoard it, rarely tell the president everything, and occasionally gift-wrap a small miracle and deliver it to the White House. This president was still pouting over the humiliating defeat of a nuclear test ban treaty Teddy had helped sabotage. The day before the Senate killed it, the CIA leaked a classified report, raising legitimate concerns about the treaty, and the president got flattened in the stampede. He was leaving office, a lame duck more concerned with his legacy than with the pressing matters of the country. Teddy had dealt with lame ducks before, and they were impossible. Since they wouldn't face the voters again, they dwelt on the big picture. In their waning days, they liked to travel, with lots of their friends, to foreign lands where they held summits with other lame ducks. They worried about their presidential libraries, and their portraits, and their biographies, so they spent time with historians. As the clock ticked, they became wiser and more philosophical, and their speeches became grander. They talked of the future, of the challenges and the way things ought to be, conveniently ignoring the fact that they'd had 8 years to do all the things that needed to be done. There was nothing worse than a lame duck, and Lake would be just as bad if and when he had the chance. Lake, the very reason Teddy was trekking to the White House, hat in hand, to grovel for a while. They were cleared through the West Wing, where Teddy suffered the indignity of having his wheelchair examined by a Secret Service agent. Then they rolled him to a small office next to the cabinet room. A busy appointment secretary explained, with no apology, that the president was running late. Teddy smiled and waved her off and mumbled something to the effect that this president had never been on time for anything. He'd suffered 12 fussy secretaries just like her, in the same position she was now in, and the others were long gone. She led York and Deville and the others away, down to the dining room where they would eat by themselves. Teddy waited, as he knew he would. He read a thick report as if time meant nothing. 10 minutes passed. They brought him coffee. 2 years ago, the president had visited Langley, and Teddy had made him wait for 21 minutes. He needed a favor then, the president did. Needed a little matter kept quiet. The only advantage to being crippled was that he didn't have to jump to his feet when the president entered the room. He finally arrived in a rush, with aides scrambling behind him as if this would impress Teddy Maynard. They shook hands and made the required greetings as the aides got rid of themselves. A waiter appeared and placed small green salads before them. "It's good to see you," the president said with a soft voice and drippy smile. Save it for television, Teddy thought, and he couldn't bring himself to return the lie. "You're looking well," he said, only because it was partially true. The president had a new tint to his hair and he looked younger. They ate their salads, and a quietness settled around them. Neither wanted a long lunch. "The French are selling toys to the North Koreans again," Teddy said, offering a crumb. "What kinds of toys?" the president asked, though he knew precisely about the trafficking, and Teddy knew he knew. "It's their version of stealth radar, which is quite stupid because they haven't perfected it yet. But the North Koreans are even dumber because they're paying for it. They'll buy anything from France, especially if the French try to hide it. The French, of course, know this, so it's all cloak and dagger, and the North Koreans pay top dollar." End of side 9.